standard of living. How shall we then live? I was invited to attend the second anniversary of a very special event, the day the Hitchcocks reached their goal of becoming completely debt-free. 2 years later, they were just as grateful for their new freedom, and even more importantly, their marriage was growing stronger. Although several times they'd been on the verge of quitting, the stakes of saving their marriage was just too high. They persevered and reached their goal. Alan and Jean were now facing a new challenge. Their income now exceeded their expenses. How should they spend the surplus? They had decisions to make. Should they move to a larger home or stay where they were and work on paying off the mortgage? Should they purchase a new car? Should they adopt a more expensive lifestyle or continue to save and give more? You know, the Bible doesn't dictate just one standard of living for everyone. However, it contains a number of principles that we should consider when choosing a lifestyle. First, nurture an eternal perspective. You know, our culture implores us to focus on the immediate. Advertisers constantly persuade consumers to gratify themselves today with no thought of tomorrow. But listen, life is short, and eternity, well, it's long. It never ends. And what we do during our short time on earth influences eternity by simply how we handle money today. We have not only the privilege of laying up treasures for ourselves in heaven, but we also have the opportunity to spend money to influence people for Jesus Christ. Gaining an eternal perspective has a profound impact on your decision-making. Moses is a good example. Listen to Hebrews 11, starting at verse 24. By faith, when Moses had grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. Now, listen to the reason he made that decision. For he was looking to the reward. Moses faced a choice. As Pharaoh's adopted son, he could enjoy a lavish lifestyle of royalty, or he could choose to become a Hebrew slave. And because he had an eternal perspective, he chose the latter and was used by the Lord in a truly remarkable way. We experience a similar decision. We can either live with a view toward eternity or live focused on this present world. Have you ever returned as an adult to a place you knew as a child? I once visited a field on which I played when I was 12 years old, and I remember it as a huge field surrounded by these towering fences. Well, when I returned 30 years later, I was shocked to discover really how small it was. Or do you remember wanting something so much you could almost taste it, yet today it means almost nothing to you? I think we'll experience something similar when we arrive in heaven. Many things that seem so important to us now will fade into insignificance in eternity. I want to encourage you to read In Light of Eternity by Randy Alcorn. In Light of Eternity. It's a powerful book about living with eternity in mind. Scripture also tells us about our identity and our role. We're citizens of heaven, not earth. We are ambassadors representing Christ on this earth, and we're aliens, strangers, and pilgrims during our time on earth. 1 Peter 1:17 says, "Since you call on a Father who judges each man's work impartially, live your lives as strangers here in reverent fear." Later, Peter added, "I urge you, as aliens and pilgrims in the world, abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul." You know, the pilgrim is a traveler who's acutely aware that the excessive accumulation of things can only distract from reaching the destination. Material possessions are valuable to a pilgrim only as they facilitate his mission. The pilgrim chooses possessions very carefully, regarding most of them as encumbrances that would slow the journey or make it impossible. Of course, many of us become settlers in the sense of living in houses and owning furniture and developing businesses. And there's nothing wrong with this, but we need to maintain a pilgrim mentality of detachment, the traveler's philosophy of traveling light. Acquire only those possessions that enable you to fulfill God's calling on your life. You know, every possession requires time and often money to maintain it. Too many or the wrong types of possessions can demand so much time, energy, or money that they distract us from our relationships with the Lord and others. The quiet, simple life is the best environment to allow us enough time to nurture our relationship with the Lord. In 1 Thessalonians 4, starting at verse 11, Paul counsels, "Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you, so that you may behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need." Now, sometimes we don't realize it, but we're actually at war. 1 Timothy 2, 3 and 4 tells us, "Suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." No soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. You know, in wartime, people often alter their lifestyles radically to help win the war. They ration the use of certain items. They spend less on life's comforts so that the army will be adequately supplied. As soldiers, we shouldn't become unduly encumbered with the cares of this life. We also need to recognize the enemy. Ephesians 6, verse 12 reveals to us, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." You know, in a war, you're going to use your most effective weapons. And the devil's mission is to divert us from serving Christ. That's his mission. And he frequently accomplishes this by tempting us to serve money. As we've seen before, money is the primary competitor with Christ for the lordship of our life. Serving money is often very difficult to identify because loving money is a what I call a respectable sin. I mean, people will congratulate you for financial success. Therefore, you have to examine your relationship with Christ and money. It's also important to submit spending decisions to the Lord. Everything we possess is owned by the Lord, and we should spend to please Him and not just for selfish purposes. Seeking the Lord's direction in spending doesn't mean that we'll never spend for anything other than a basic necessity. Recreation, appropriate leisure activities, and rest are all important. 1 Timothy 4, verse 4 tells us, "For everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it's received with gratitude." Now, one thing we all need to be careful of is comparing our lifestyle to others, because some use comparison to justify spending more than they should. How many people have suffered financially because they tried but couldn't afford to keep up with the Joneses? As someone said, you can never keep up with the Joneses. Just about the time you catch them, they refinance their home, go deeper in debt to buy more stuff. And if you're affluent, your lifestyle should be based on the conviction that the Lord wants you to have a certain standard of living, which isn't necessarily dictated by the maximum that you can afford. Now, have you ever felt that if only you were in a more prestigious position or had more money, then you could really accomplish significant things for the Lord? Well, let's examine two men who lived in Rome and were certainly at different ends of the economic spectrum. You know, before the gladiator contest in the Colosseum, everyone would stand, waiting silently for Caesar. The contest couldn't begin until he arrived. And when Caesar arrived, he was greeted with these thunderous shouts of, "Hail Caesar! Hail Caesar!" He had more power, prestige, and wealth than anybody else. He was worshipped as though he were a god. But in another place in Rome, there was another man in totally different circumstances. He was in prison, chained to guards. He invested his time praying, writing to his friends. His name was Paul. One man lived in a palace, the other in prison. One had almost unlimited wealth, the other almost nothing. One was the center of attention, the other virtually ignored. But almost 2,000 years later, people around the world recognize which of these two men made the eternally important contribution. They name their children after the prisoner, their salads after the emperor. You know, being used by Christ in a significant way has nothing to do with a high position or great riches. It has everything to do with a willingness to allow Christ to become your Lord. Now, Romans 12:2 begins with this command in the Amplified Version. Do not be conformed to this world, this age fashioned after and adopted to its external, superficial customs. As you know, we live in one of the most affluent cultures the world has ever known, and we're bombarded with manipulative advertising to prompt us to spend money. Advertisers usually stress the importance of image rather than function. For example, automobile ads rarely focus on a car as reliable, economical transportation. Instead, it's an image of status or sex appeal that's projected. I mean, just reflect on the claims of TV commercials. No matter what the product, clothing, deodorant, credit cards, cars, beverages, you name it, the message that's communicated is that the fulfilling, beautiful, wrinkle-free life can be ours only if we're willing to buy it. Unfortunately, this has influenced all of us to some extent. Author George Fouché says it this way, people buy things they do not need with money they do not have to impress people they do not even like. And none of us is immune to the lure of this message. Several years ago, a really sharp-looking van caught my eye. Our family had a secondhand 11-year-old station wagon painted a really ugly yellow. And this advertised van was perfect for our family. It was just the right size, just the right color. I even rationalized that this van would be better suited for use in ministry. I found myself spending 30 minutes a day studying these slick, beautiful brochures and just daydreaming about driving one. I was totally hooked. That yellow station wagon I had seemed to get uglier every single day, and I was about to buy the van when I decided to seek the counsel of Jack Norman, a local car dealer and friend. He asked me how many miles I had on the station wagon. I said, about 55,000. He thought for a moment, and then he said, you know, that station wagon is in really good condition, and Howard, it should be great transportation for years. You know, I didn't want to hear that, but you know, I agreed with him. His advice ended up saving me thousands of dollars, and the moment the decision was made to keep the yellow station wagon, I lost the desire for the van. It no longer dominated my thinking, and interestingly enough, that yellow station wagon had become better looking. Well, from time to time, we all get hooked on something we think we just have to buy, a car, home, computer, you name it. Once hooked, it's so easy to rationalize a purchase. Please remember this. Seek the Lord's guidance and the counsel of godly people when you're making spending decisions.